Bhagavan Bhagavatam Bhagavan The Lord is not only the creator and destroyer of the material manifestations of his different energies. He is more than a simple creator and destroyer. For there is his feature of ananda, or his pleasure feature. This pleasure feature of the Lord is understood by the pure devotees only, and not by others. The impersonalist is satisfied simply by understanding the all-pervasive influence of the Lord. This is called Brahman realization. Greater than the impersonalist is the mystic who sees the Lord situated in his heart as Paramatma, the partial representation of the Lord. But there are pure devotees who take part in the direct pleasure, ananda potency of the Lord, by factual reciprocation of loving service. The Lord in his abode, called the Vaikuntha planets, which are eternal manifestations, always remains with his associates and enjoys transcendental loving service by his pure devotees in different transcendental humors. The pure devotees of the Lord thus undergo a practice of that devotional service to the Lord during the manifestation of creation, and take full advantage of the manifestation by qualifying themselves to enter into the kingdom of God. The Bhagavad Gita, 1855, confirms this. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yadam yasachasmi tattatam tato mam tattato vishnatva vishite tattarantam. By development of pure devotional service, one can factually know the Lord as he is, and thus be trained in the bona fide service of the Lord, and be allowed to enter into the direct association of the Lord in so many capacities. The highest glorious association with the Lord is made possible in the planet of Goloka Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna enjoys himself with the gopis and his favorite animals, the Suradi cows. A description of this transcendental land of Krishna is given in the Brahma Sarita, which is considered by Lord Sri Chaitanya to be the most authentic literature in this connection. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Vitale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Nandri Namaste Sarasate Deve Kaurava Charini Vishesha Sundarai Vistrachate Sathani Among Gyan Zimaranta Shravananjana Shalapaya Chaksuna Vritu Jain Tasman Sri Gurdaya. Once Prabhupada took his chariot to sing the devotees,
excuse me,
let me fill this cup. You have to leave a little space, otherwise, when you try to drink it in the proper way, it goes down your front of your shirt. You had to pour some out. Whoever does this should remember this. Or you have to get the cup, you know, this girl. Sometimes you get a Bhagavatam class, and you start to get thirsty, and you look down, and there's the water filled to the brim, and you're conflicted. You can't touch it, but there it is. Itam bhavena katito bhagavan bhagavatama. Na itam bhavena. See, first, itam bhavena katito. So the Bhagavatam is the great transcendentalist have described the Lord Itambhava means as a being as Bhava is an entity or an existence. Itam, thus endowed in this way, in this manner. See, we're now coming to the conclusion of the second canto. This is So, Itam, that's what the whole second canto has been talking about, these features of the Lord. The first step is bhavarization, the meditation on the universal form, so that we can understand how everything is working under the control of the Lord. Then description of the super soul, and so this has been the concern of the second canto. This very chapter again goes back to the universal form and describes creation in terms of the cosmic embryology, you might call it, kind of universal form. Develops the universal form. The world develops like an embryo of the universal form coming into growth. So these things, creation and destruction, have been. So the Lord has been described in reference to these things, pretty much. So now he's promising more, as in say, Shukadeva Goswami. So the great transcendentalists have described the Lord with these particular features, the ones that in the manner we've been describing, but not in Hambhavena. But now there's a negation, but not in these features, but in fact something that is Param, beyond that, the greatest, more glorious, Prabhupada says, the most glorious. The Suraya, the great devotees, Arhanti, deserve to see. That means they are qualified to see. They have the right to see these the other features. So this is a kind of a prelude that now we've been discussing this. Now later on we're going to hear more. So this is actually really the standard of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says in the very beginning of Bhagavatam, in his introduction of the preface, he says that the concept of God and the concept of the absolute truth are not on the same level. That's quite a deep realization, because people don't know the difference. Now, in philosophy, there's always a distinction made between sense and reference, or connotation and denotation. Sense means the meaning of a word, and the reference is the class of things to which that word refers. Like, for example, like
the phrase the morning star and the evening star. They have a different sense, they have a different meaning. But the reference in both cases is the same as the planet Venus. So sometimes things with a different sense can have the same reference. So he's talking about the sense, the meaning of the word God and the word absolute truth. And the because then he goes to say, God indicates a controller. Here Prabhupada is speaking of the Sanskrit word Ishwara. God means the controller. So in principle, there can be many gods. There's nothing to say in the meaning of the word God that there can't be a committee. But Bhagavatam hits upon the absolute truth, which means the ultimate source of all energies. So it's a different concept than just God. Absolute truth means Brahman, that from which everything comes. So, now, Krishna, he's the reference also for Ishwara. Usually we say Paramishwara to distinguish from the other Ishwaras that are around. But Krishna is really described as the, when we understand Krishna as the absolute truth, that from which everything comes, the ultimate source of all. And there's only one absolute truth. So that absolute truth is described in the Bhagavatam as, by those who know it, who know this tattva, which is non-dual. It's a dvaita gyan, it's non-dual, but still they know in three principal features as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Prabhupada has mentioned them in this verse. The all-pervading feature of God, the effulgence on which everything is resting, this is called Brahman. Spiritual effulgence. And then there is Paramatma. We are more concerned in the Bhagavatam with Paramatma. And then beyond that is Bhagavan. What's the difference between Paramatma and Bhagavan? Prabhupada calls Paramatma here a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Partial representation of the Lord. How is partial? And Krishna uses that word, eka amshena stitojagat, it's a little piece of myself. I am maintaining this whole creation. He refers to that as eka amsha, one little part. I am maintaining this whole creation. So Paramatma is the same Lord, but only insofar as he's dealing with the material energies and also with the conditioned souls, the souls that are embedded in that energy temporarily. That's Paramatma. So he has this limited feature. Although he's the same, Prabhupada calls these forms of the Lord plenary, that is, they have full power. But you don't see everything manifest. Now, most religious traditions, what they know of God is simply Paramatma, at least as far as their idea. The creator, the destroyer, the director of the material energy, and maybe the guide of those who are trying to get out. Well, that's basically what happens. Only with reference to people in the material world. But what is Bhagavan? That is the Lord in relationship to his internal potencies. Exclusively in relationship to his internal potencies. This is what we mean by Bhagavan. Paramatma, he's in relationship to his external and marginal potencies, insofar as they're in the material world. But Bhagavan, he is in relationship with his internal potencies. That's the spiritual world. Of this the world does not know very much. what happens, what's going on in the spiritual world. There's very little information. A number of years ago in America, the famous evangelist Billy Graham was writing a newspaper column. People would ask questions and he would answer them in his newspaper column. And someone wrote in to say, what happens when they go to heaven? What's going on there? And he said, I don't know. Basically, he said, I don't know. But he said, I'm sure there is some heavenly, wonderful task for us. I think those are his words. Some heavenly, wonderful task. And so, but abstract idea, because he's a personalist and he understands there has to be a personal relationship. But actually, what goes on? He first uses the word task, the idea of play. It seems to be a little bit, we'll just, you know, converse, we'll goof off. So at least task means he's thinking of more on the Vaikuntha level than on the other. So you probably use the term Vaikuntha Loka because that's also Bhagavan. He's in relationship to his interval potencies there. And then he said, but the most glorious is Krishna. Of all these poems, is Krishna. Now, why is that more glorious? Again, it's the same Lord. There's only one God. But he has all these different manifestations because he's just dealing differently with different people in different circumstances. We do that too. Prabhupada gives the example of a judge in the high court. So a judge sitting on the bench, they still wear black robes in America, but they don't have these funny wigs like they do in still do someplace. But anyway, he dresses in a particular way, or she. The judge is dressed in a particular way. And is treated in a particular way. The lawyers say, Your Honor, if it please the court. And there's a certain amount of formal ritual that goes on when a judge is presiding over the court. Then the session is over, he goes back into his chambers, he takes off his robe, and maybe one of those lawyers who is really deferential and respectful comes back much ago and they go out to lunch together, they put their arms around each other, they call each other, he's no longer Your Honor, Sam. It's suddenly a change in relationship, change in clothes, change of features. So we have different kinds of social relationships. And we talk a different way, we act a different way, we dress a different way. The same person that's the judge, he's this way with his friends. When he goes home with his kids, he's another way, with his family. Then he goes to the university and he teaches a law course, and then he's another way with his students. So we have these diverse roles, and there's a limit to how diverse they get, otherwise we can't. Sometimes people do things that can't integrate with their other selves, you know. Suppose periodically this lawyer dresses up in women's clothes and goes to a certain bar. You know, that's hard to put together. We can always stay in so many diverse roles. We lose our family, we become fake or play actors or something like that. But Krishna actually has a limitation. He's completely unified. He's one. Really, we understand a chincha beta beta tattva. That really strictly applies to Krishna and his energies. Between Krishna and Balaram, it's just a beta. There's just no difference. They're not one and different, they're one. Of course, because there's different kinds of differences. So there's difference that I have with something that's not myself, but there's also the differences I have within myself. So Krishna Bhakti is the same person, but he's just playing a different role. Now we also can only do this sequentially, but Krishna can do it all at once. He expands himself. So he's going on in this way. So he is really amazing. He's a person and he plays different roles. Because a person means social. To be a person is to be in relationship with other people. So because Krishna is supremely personal, we also see that Krishna is supremely social. In fact, just how social, we start to find out. Especially when you get to Goloka Vrindavan. Because a relationship means there's reciprocation with those you're relating to. So therefore he has these different environments that he creates in the spiritual world to foster and sustain different kinds of relationships. So in Vaikuntha, here's the Lord, but his majesty is on full display. Naturally, he's majestic. In Sanskrit, this is Aishwarya, derived from the word Ishwara. Lordship. He is simply magnificent beyond your fullest conceptions. And stunning and attractive. Because when you see anyone that's magnificent, you're immediately attracted. There's not a whole lot of magnificence around anymore in the world. It seems to have all gone out, but once in a while, you see it. So Krishna's wealth, strength, fame, power, beauty, you see, all of that's on display. And it's great as you understand that here is, in fact, the complete source of all beings, the Lord of all creation. And here am I. I'm so little and so small and so insignificant. So there's a gap between the Lord and myself. And therefore, even though he's immensely attractive with all this opulence and majesty on display, at the same time, it's intimidating. Just like somebody who's a British subject, they may laugh about the Queen. They say they made a funny movie about the, you know, they tell jokes about the Queen, the royal family. It is a, you know, comedians, stand-up comedians, and they all make fun. But if somehow or other that person gets invited to Buckingham Palace for some formal reception, you know, there it's a different mood all of a sudden, you know. It's majesty, you know, it's still on display. They don't wisecrack. They act with extreme deference according to protocol. It's intimidating. So this is the feature of majesty. So when those who are in Vaikuntha, that majesty is on display. So they're aware of the difference in power, and the difference in control with everything, and so they have to stand off of it. With your hands folded. And so although there's love, there's immense attraction, at the same time you're aware of the majesty. But this has in that one certain effect, it limits the relationship that Krishna can have. There's this barrier to intimacy. What to do? I am the absolute truth, the origin of everything, and here's a little jiva. We can only get so close. Because, you know, I'm who I am and the genus who he is, basically. There's a class difference. That's pretty stunning. But Krishna wants to have tasteful relationships. So therefore, he does this thing where he causes the jiva to forget. This is what the Lord of Vrindavan is for. He wants to enjoy intimate, close relationships, and so he causes the living entity to forget. It's a kind of a special forgetting. In one sense, it occurs to people every so often, yeah, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's a lot of Brahmas coming, hanging out to worship him. But then it doesn't sort of matter. Just like a little boy, you know, his father may be a five-star general. But yeah, he does that, but that's not what really is important. So other people, yes, sir, you know, he says a word and you know, thousands of troops are on the march. Yeah, but that doesn't matter so much. Or, yeah, it's cool, but that's not what interests him. He wants to play ball. So the same way that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, it occurs to them every so often, but they don't like to think about it. And as far as creation, as far as what we consider to be God, you know, the controller of the material energies, that's just a little job he does on the side. It's not really important. And when people say God, they usually mean someone who has this office. Who has this a position? It's like president, or prime minister. But who is the person who has the job? And if you meet somebody in, like, the president or the prime minister in the official capacity, or the Queen of England for that matter, Queen is also an official name, you know, well, that's pretty good. But if you meet them personally, well, that's even, you're even further well established. So those people who want to, you meet the Queen of England, you come to some formal section and you bow and curtsy and say Your Majesty and so and so the thing. And then another time you may meet the Queen, it doesn't look so great. She's sitting there at the breakfast table with her house coat on and those little dogs, those corgis running around and, you know, talking with everybody. And you're sitting there too. Doesn't look so great, but actually, you're closer. You've more arrived if you're invited to this personal circle. What's her name? Bess or something? I forgot. But they have a first name basis, you know? So this is Krishna. He causes the devotees to forget or not to care that he is actually the Supreme Personality of God. And he's just Krishna. So what Goloka Vrindavan means, here's Krishna's personal life. This is the personal life of God. This is what he's doing when he's not being God. I had this question, a similar question that was asked to Billy Graham when I was a little kid who used to go to Sunday school. And I asked Sunday school teachers, a few of them actually, because we moved a lot, they were different ones. I started thinking about God, and I started to think that God is all powerful. He has unlimited power. That means that for God, just the business of creating the world and keeping it going and maintaining it, which is certainly a big job for us, but for him he could do it with like the tip of his lean finger. So then I asked, so what does he do with his time? This obviously doesn't preoccupy him. He must be doing something else. What does he do with his time? And nobody could. They were surprised. No, nobody, I mean, they just never even thought of the question. And two or three times I got the same kind of, why? So I figured that when you go to heaven, that God is bored. And that everyone else there is bored too. And my experience of church was, and the spiritual life was, it's something that gave you a taste for boredom. because you had to sit still for 1 hour. I couldn't wait to get out. So people just, they don't know what's going on. But what's really going on, I mean, is that there's a real party that's taking place. And Krishna is having fun. Again, you see, when people who are not aware, who don't go through the Bhagavatam the way they should from the beginning, and they hear about Krishna, they just think he's some guy. Because he acts like a normal person. If you don't first understand who you're dealing with, you might disrespect him, create an offense. Sometimes it happens, you know. There's a person in the line in the supermarket or something, and some kind of crude or nasty or abrupt with them, and that person goes, did you know who that was? He won the Nobel Prize. I apologize, you know, because you didn't recognize him or something. So that for this reason, these pastimes of Krishna are called confidential. They're only really revealed to or understandable to those people who are trained. Otherwise, ordinary people just be like, you see scholars, you know, refer to Krishna as a village Romeo, all this other kind of stuff. They don't understand what's going on. So what's really taking place is an exchange of feelings on the highest level. It's the same Lord. But what happens? The Lord has these two features. One is Aishwarya, majesty, and the other feature is called Madhurya, beauty or sweetness. So to reveal himself as Krishna, he just turns down the Madhurya and lets the beauty and sweetness come out through it so it's not blocked. Although Vrindavan has, it's in the spiritual world. And therefore, like in Brahma Samhita, he describes a rural scene. It's like you just go a little ways from here, and you'll see it already. Little boys taking cows out, and village people. It's a village, you know. It's the rural Krishna. There's the urban Krishna in Dwarka, but here's the rural Krishna. Not a big city, not fancy, simple houses, trees. It's the boondocks, it's the back of beyond, you know, the way out there. Forgotten little place, a little tiny hamlet, village. But so, Chintamani Prakvarasatama Su, but the places that these little houses that they're, whatever they're building stones from, Chintamani. You get one little Chintamani rock, your fortune is made. It turns everything else to gold, right? So that's just the conventional rocks laying around. They build their houses out of Chintamani, Prakvarasatama Su. Kalpa Riksha Vaksha Vakeshu, and there's so many trees that you see in any forest, but these trees, each one is a Kalpa Riksha. There's Kalpa Rikshas in the heavenly planets. You get one, you've got it made. Surabhi Rapipalyamata, and the cows, each single cow is Surabhi. You need the Bhagavatam of a day, fight over one Surabhi cow. And then these little village ladies who milk the cows and everything, and milkmaids, there's so many of them, each one is lakshmi. Hidden lakshmi, sort of, you know. In other words, if Lakshmi Devi just comes to your house for a little while, and you haven't made it, and here Krishna's got, you know, thousands, millions, tens of millions, koti, 10 million. So all that opulence is there, but you just see, you know, this peaceful little village scene. So it's kind of under the surface a little bit, so you can, you're not distracted from the real opulence, which is the relationship with Krishna. So now Krishna, you know, he's not constrained by majesty, and he can exchange fully with devotees. He says in Bhagavad Gita, comes to die with Bhajamiyam, that as they, he says Bhajamiyam, the word Bhajami really means worship. The way they worship me, I worship them. So where can he really do that? The place where he can really do that to the fullest extent is Goloka Vrindavan. So there's a full reciprocation. Prabhupada alludes to this here. That when he says factual reciprocation of loving service, Prabhupada uses the word reciprocation. Krishna has this feature, and in fact, it's a feature of the world. We do it too. When somebody does something for you, you owe them. You know, the natural thing in the world is somebody does something for you, you feel the impulse to do something back. I think this is like standard human behavior. In a lecture, Prabhupada was describing how a Brahmin lived. That he would go into a village and he would teach anything. And the children would come. Because a Brahmin can learn anything and teach anything. So whatever they need to know, he would teach them. And then he said, but he did not charge tuition. That was not allowed. Because a Brahmin's vritti is charity. He lives by charity. So no tuition. And then Prabhupada says, in this way, India meant free education for everyone. He wouldn't charge tuition. But then Prabhupada said that the parents, when they would see, oh, this nice Brahmana, he's teaching our children, here's some rice, here's some here's some cloth, here's some ghee, here's some... So he had no want of anything. In fact, he had more than he needed, which he was supposed to give away to somebody else. So when I heard this description, I thought, wow, you know, what happens? And now if I simply do something I don't charge tuition, do people think, oh, what can I do for you? They say, hey, it's free! Let's go. So, for example, even in ISKCON and all our schools and gurukulas and everything, we charge tuition. Because the mentality is so far away from real exchanges that we think we can't get, everybody wants something for nothing. But even this mentality is karmically bad, because if we take something from somebody and don't give an exchange, the next birth, we have to take birth to pay it back. Because you're obliged. There's an obligation. You take service from somebody, you're obliged. So Prabhupada describes that when we take birth, we already have so many obligations. We, first of all, to our parents who are taking care of us, just to the poor bearers in our family, who made some arrangements for us, for the government, which is making peace and quiet. You know, so you're already, just being born, that you're already indebted. And one is supposed to pay these people back. It's just you really actually should have the obligation, let me do something back for you. And if you want to understand something about Vedic culture, you should understand this is the pervading ethic or ethos of people. So that when somebody does some service, you do service back. And usually people can still remember and 100 years ago, even in America, you lived in a small town. People are always doing that. You just, somebody needed something, you give them, and you do that, you know, if I'm a problem, they'll take care of me. There's no contract, there's no deal, this is human life, disappearing human life. So this comes from Krishna. Krishna is the same way. When the devotees serve him, he wants to serve back. But these are pure devotees. What do they want? They want just to have more service. They want more love. They want Krishna. They want to love Krishna more. And so, in this particular relationship, the devotee simply wants to serve Krishna more and express love for Krishna more. And so Krishna wants to reciprocate and give the devotees what they want more, which is more love for them, so they love Krishna more. And so there's a deepening exchange. This is how the ocean of transcendental bliss increases. And Prabhupada described this once when we were used to have Janmashtami in New Vrindavan, and he was sitting in front of the deities at Radha Vrindavan Chandra, and Prabhupada said, this we saw later from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says that there's a reciprocation going on between Radha and Krishna eternally. That Krishna looks at Radha, or she starts with Radha looks at Krishna, and she sees how beautiful Krishna is. And when she sees this, her bliss increases. And because her bliss increases, her beauty increases. And so when Krishna sees that Radharani is becoming even more beautiful, because when people feel good, they look better. Unfortunately, we have material bodies, so there's a limit. I can be really happy, but I won't have, my looks only good. But in a spiritual body, there's no difference. So that the body is the full expression of the mentality. So therefore, when Radharani's bliss increases, her beauty immediately fully expressed. You know, she becomes more beautiful. And then when Krishna sees that Radharani has become more beautiful, his bliss increases and his beauty increases, and Prabhupada said, so on it goes without any hint. This is a Nam-Nam-Budhi-Vardhanam. There's by this reciprocation of service and mutual appreciation and mutual affection, transcendental bliss is increasing. And there is no upper limit. This is a dynamic. And what it means that one becomes a devotee in the Sankirtan movement, and we are supposed to join in those activities that increase the transcendental bliss. So this is the more features. We're coming to the end of the class. Not just these, but also Parama, which the devotees are able to see. So that's a forecast of what will take place here by the process of bhaktya, amavijanati. Krishna says it. Then you can actually know me tatvataha. And so all of this is explained fully in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, how this takes place. So here, this is, if you look at Bhagavatam, if you look at all the different chapters, all the different avatars, all the different features of the Lord, and with the relationship with his different energies, his universal form, his super soul, his multi-avatars, his position in the Vaikuntha planets, by his position in Vrindavan, there's a picture. So when we say that God, this is what we mean. And if you have somebody else you think is God, tell us about it, and we'll look or compare them side by side. Because God is a classic definition of God, by saying handsome, that which no greater can be conceived. So here it is, can you conceive it? Even think of, imagine anyone greater. I dare you. So when you say Krishna, this is what we mean. Here in the Bhagavatam, gives us this full picture into the Lord and all of us. Okay, any questions? Yes, John.
When you were saying that Krishna wants to have more full relationships, so therefore he causes the jivas to forget this illumination from the majesty of this personality. Mm-hmm. Does he elect those souls to whom he wants to have these more intimate relationships, or is it by their own choice?
Well, there's a certain amount of freedom. You know, every soul has its own choice. When a jiva has a minute amount of freedom, that means that things happen that are not attributable to Krishna, in one sense. They're attributable to the decision of the jiva. Of course, what's attributable to Krishna is the facility to express that decision or to act on that decision. But the decision itself is referred to the jiva. And that's what makes us individuals.
Because then the question comes up, why would anyone stay by Krishna? Why wouldn't all the jivas be...
Because people are different. So some people really like majesty. They just really prefer this particular thing. You fall in love with Krishna in a certain aspect. We've just been reading about Lord Brahma in another class. And Kurma Rupa is particularly mentioned as being very beautiful. And Prabhupada remarks, there are devotees, you know, Aryama in Hiranyavarsha is worshipping Kurma. He's his, like, devotee of Kurma. That's the most dear form to him. And Kurma is like he's a feature of the Lord, so therefore, he is super attractive. They're all attractive. But people still have different tastes. No, so we see there are Krishna bhaktas, there are Ram bhaktas, there are the Srinda bhaktas. You know, people have different tastes. That's the way it is. Therefore, Krishna gets to enjoy almost everything in all his different ways. It's particularly mentioned, he appears in these forms in relationship with his various devotees. Prabhupada quotes this in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That's why.
In our lives, it's imperative, very strong, that we should decide to become Brahman and Maya and Krishna. As if, you know, that's our loss of everybody in our minds. And that's it. You know, such a decision has been made by the authorities. And you're this, and
Well, that's definitely the Goswamis. That was their Manjari Bhav, and that was certainly Lord Chaitanya's feeling with the Bhava and duty of Srimati Radharani, but also Nityananda was part of his movement. Nityananda was surrounded by people in a fraternal of Rasa. And Prabhupada remarks somewhere, generally in the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, these two are predominating because of that. Lord Chaitanya had Murari Rupta, Ram Bhakta, in his entourage. So it depends on that, I guess. So we have our particular thing that we do. And we see that sometimes in different Pushtimar people are pretty much in a parental mood. I don't know how it works out that way. Prabhupada remarks in the Bhagavad Gita that the Hare Krishna mantra can be used to address all the various forms of the Lord. But we see Vishnu Chakravarti you know, and then the word hare in the vocative case, the way Prabhupada is taught is the vocative of hara, which is Radharani. But it's also the vocative of hari, with an I. So some people do it that way. I'm told that the Vaishnavas in Puri chant Hare Krishna mantra and my Radha means the budget. But anyway, Prabhupada said it can be used to any of the forms of the Lord. And even if you see how Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and others, Rama is also Krishna. That's also as in Radhika Ramana. So they just use the Hare Krishna mantra just to address Radha Krishna. Rama, there's no Ramachandra, there's no Balaram. So there's some play like this. How it works out, we'll see. Everybody ends up. That's all I can say. Prabhu?
I heard once that Billy Graham said that he hoped that there was golf in heaven because he loved it so much.
Yeah, I heard that when Prabhupada first saw people playing golf, he cried. He saw a grown man spending their time trying to hit this ball into this little hole. Yeah. They're ball games, but they're with Krishna anyway. Better than golf.
Just on the top of this point there about, you know, the different leelas. And I thought Prabhupada actually said that in our line, the devotees are generally in the top three rasas, the higher three rasas.
Mm.
And I think this question was an old one, what if you're not in that rasa?
You're still on, right?
There's a fourth separate. Yeah. There's four separate eyes.
You're
not the only person.
Yeah, that's true too.
There's accommodation.
So we say this about Prabhupada, that he built a house in which the whole world can live, which if that is true would mean that, you know, you could accommodate everybody. And you know the temple that was built by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, they have on the four corners each of the four Sampradaya Acharyas united together under Lord Chaitanya. So it may be that in the future we will be all accommodated. And everyone is welcome. Yeah.
There is many
Ishwaras. Yeah.
Why
Ishopanishad? It's called Ishopanishad, but not Paramishwar. Yeah. There's questions why in the Ishopanishad it doesn't say Paramishwar, it says Ishwar. You notice the Ishopanishad, it takes this word Ishwar, or Isha, actually, it's the word Isha. And really, in the course of the Upanishad, you find out what it means. And very definitely in Isha Upanishad, it's distinguished from the deities of Asu, Asamuti, and Samuti. What that Upanishad does is really take the idea of Ishwara and show that the absolute truth, that Brahman is a person. Because there are those who think that Isha is subordinate to Brahman, or many Ishas are subordinate to Brahman. But the Isha Upanishad definitely is that thing. And then Hiranmaya Katapveya Satyasya Hitarupam. This Haran, this golden globe, this pot made of gold surrounds your face, and you remove it. So it's clear that it's talking about the absolute truth. That absolute truth is Isha. So it just defines in this case what is meant by Isha in reference to the absolute truth. That's what I understand. But if you look at the whole context, it becomes clear that they're talking about not just one Isha, but all the human sources of all energy for one without a second, beside which there is no other. Okay. Yes? Sorry, can you shut the door, please? A devotee does not separate. It's the same Lord. So we see that we understandable about Vishnu, and we do not think that those who are worshippers of Vishnu are some second tier, second level people. But the taste of Lord Chaitanya and the taste of Lord Nityananda is toward Krishna. So we're specifically being introduced to the Krishna Bhakti. In Krishna Bhakti, Krishna is also all the rasas. So that becomes the focus of the Bhagavatam. Because in the 10th canto, if you see the whole Bhagavatam, most of it's 10th canto. It's really, really predominating. It leads up to this thing. And Prabhupada was very careful. There are people within what's called the Gaudiya community who almost talk about Narayana as he's another god, something like that. And sort of, it's almost like a status thing, the higher status and the low status is Rasa. So Prabhupada was not like that. He was not like that. Simply, he also appreciated all of the Bhagavatam very, very much so. And you have to consider, here's Maharaj Prishan. He has a short time to live. Why all this stuff? Because it's all really in relationship to Krishna. And ultimately, if you have a really big vision, you can appreciate Krishna in the Loka Vrindavan. And at the same time, you can appreciate everything else. Especially you need to, if you're in this world of Krishna consciousness. And so, with Prabhupada, we see both of those things. What Prabhupada called a liberal or magnanimous, a broad-minded outlook on these things, which you don't see everywhere like that. And so that's something unique about, something special about Prabhupada.
The second factor was also Krishna Mathura's
inspired,
exactly like Krishna.
Yeah, that's true. And that should also be appreciated. But ultimately, your real affection will maybe rely on one of these particular, and not only Krishna, but particular Krishna in some particular pastime, Krishna relationship with some particular devotees, Krishna in a particular age. The devotees more and more Krishna become obsessed with Krishna, and they don't know why, but this is what attracts them. It's like in the material world, you fall in love with somebody, you can't figure out why. But it's just there, this is there. Yes.
I was just thinking this is good for the Gita. My Prabhupada said that the devotee actually doesn't even like to talk to the attention of Lord Krishna. He likes to talk to the attention exclusively on Krishna. So although I agree with what he's saying, that Prabhupada.
Yeah, Prabhupada sometimes talks like that. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. He speaks. Where is that? That's in that. Well, you're in the Gita, that's right. Yeah. And he says that. That Krishna is saying him. Yeah. Clearly, that's Prabhupada's taste. But he speaks that way here. Because in one context, he'll speak this way, in another context, he'll speak another way. And other problems just feel different in different contexts. We kind of want to think the same everywhere. But, people trained in native culture are very much able to, their thinking is more context specific. And rather than just saying things over all particular contexts, much more sensitive to context like this. And so sometimes to us it keeps looking like a contradiction. But she's just doing things appropriately according to the different contexts. So if you're reading something in the Bhagavatam about Lord Narayan, you know, Prabhupada's fully capable of like really getting into how wonderful and great Lord Narayan is, how much you fall in love with him, and so on. But in another context, speaking a different way. Okay, it's time to stop. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Bhagavatam.